Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com.
Precision Hydration offer electrolyte drinks in different strengths to match how you sweat. Personalise your hydration strategy today at precisionhydration.com and get a free box or tube of pH worth up to $9.99 using the code OXYGENADDICT.
And foodcell.co.uk.
The next generation of nutritional carriers designed to allow endurance triathletes and cyclists to carry enough food and gels while allowing easy access. Check it out at foodcell.co.uk and use the code KONA20 for a 20% discount.
And we're also brought to you by Team Oxygen Addict at teamoxygenaddict.com.
Event-specific training plans, coaching support from your host, Rob Wilby, monthly video coaching calls, and a private Facebook group for you and your teammates.
And remember, everyone, you can check out our new Oxygen Addict Triathlon community page on Facebook. Just search for that and you can get on there. We've got nearly 600 members now, Hells. How cool is that?
This is growing week on week. It's a busy little place over in Facebook and lots of people are chatting all things triathlon.
Yeah, it's good,
saddles,
isn't it?
Yeah, anything. Saddles, you know, heart rates, races.
Yeah, we've got everything from equipment, training, races. Please have a look at my bike and tell me how beautiful it is there. And they're some of my favourite threads, actually.
You can spend a lot of time looking through.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like a new bike, Hells. When someone posts a picture of a new bike, that's a guilty pleasure for me.
Looking at new bikes?
Just looking at people, pictures of other people's bikes, yeah.
Nice. If I admit, I quite like looking at pictures of sunsets and sunrises. Is that okay?
I like that too. Massive fan of sunsets and sunrises.
Yeah,
but
find it quite inspirational.
Well, maybe we'll start a thread for that. Your favourite sunset or sunrise?
Kona spam for anyone going out there. Yeah, I'm quite happy because I just like beautiful landscapes.
There was a cracker this morning, Hell.
Yeah, every year, honestly, I choose, you know, inspiring pictures like mountains and clouds and sun. Outdoors.
I'm going to send you my screensaver. I've got a sunset over one of the surfing beaches in Cornwall. It's lovely. I'll send it you.
Yep, great. Thanks.
Well, we should probably get back on track, shouldn't we? Right. The show today, first up, what have you got? We've got an interview with three-time 70.3 winner in the UK, Elliot Smales. He's pretty much dominated the male 70.3 racing scene this year. So we managed to get him on. Cracking interview, Hells. He's a lovely chap. Refreshingly honest as well. I was expecting him to be like super confident, but it's pretty amazing to hear how he basically suffers from the same self-doubt that pretty much everyone I've ever met does as well. So really nice, humble guy. So that's a great interview for later on. We've got some results coming from around the world. We've got a bit of Coach's Couch, and we also have news about who's racing in Kona and who's not, haven't we, for later on?
Yes, that is correct. Rob, a few big names are not going to be there on the Big Island.
Yeah, it's getting to the start line is half the battle, isn't it? So we'll get you updated later on. So let's jump right in, then we'll kick off with the results, which are sponsored by our friends over at Precision Hydration. There's been a few interesting races this weekend. But first up, I want to give a shout out to Paul Newsome, who a lot of you will know the name. He's the head coach over at Swim Smooth. Did you know, Hells, him and Andy Blow from Precision Hydration raced the Otolo World Championships together as a team? And there's a cracking blog that Paul's written up about it. Have you seen it?
I have seen the blog and it is a really, really interesting read. It's fantastic. And it's more the back story,
yeah.
I think, that Paul goes
definitely.
Into. As
yeah,
to
Paul
why
and Andy, they were mates,
so
weren't they, back 20 years ago and used to race together. There's a great photo of them with bleached blonde hair in the blog back in like the late 90s, it must be. So yeah, Paul got himself back into shape for this, to do this one. And actually, there's a series of really interesting articles. I'm a big fan of his because I think of all the triathlon / industry writers and bloggers, Paul writes with like a real honesty, doesn't he? Goes into what's going on in his brain. And there's loads of really valuable stuff about swim coaching, but there's also loads of really interesting stuff as well. So I was dead interested to read about his kind of, I'm doing this because I'm turning 40 kind of thoughts as well. But as for the race racing the full Otolo World Championships. It just sounds like he was absolutely wrecked by the end, doesn't it?
Oh, the photos just... I think the photos portray a little bit of it, but then his words as well, then you really get the impression.
Although he's a great swimmer, he really is honest and humble about like falling over on the rocks where it's slippy. And there's a finish line video he posted of he basically gets to without 10 meters of the finish and Andy has to drag him over the line because he's so wrecked. It's really, really compelling to watch. So yeah, go and check it out. I think you can just access it through the Swim Smooth blog. You'll be able to find it, I'm sure, if you Google it, people. But dead, dead interesting. PH were official...
sponsors.
Official either electrolyte sponsors or however you'd term it for the race. And I imagine that's pretty important because if you're running and swimming for 10 hours and you're running in a wetsuit, you're going to get pretty hot, sweaty, I'd imagine, aren't you?
That definitely. And Paul was saying in the blog just how much that it had helped him out throughout the race and that it was so important to keep on top of his hydration. So there are some loads of useful tips on their website as ever about how hydration.
I can't get my head around that still, running for like at one point they ran a half marathon but did it in a wetsuit. Can't get
and
my head around that.
Isn't that sort of six hours even into the race? I was about to say 6 miles. That's very wrong. 6 hours into the race is then when you've got to do that half marathon. Yeah, it is. It's just on another scale.
It is bonkers, isn't it? So anyway, listen, get yourselves over to precisionhydration.com and check it out. Loads of information to educate yourself. You can take their online sweat test. You can see them in person for a personalized sweat test. You can get individualized electrolyte concentrations for your drink, so you'll actually have a drink that matches how you sweat. It's all really, really good stuff. And remember, you can use our special listeners code, which is Oxygen Addict, to get $9.99 worth for free. So there's no risk trial as well. So get over there and check it out. All right then, Hells. So first up, should we go with Super League jersey to kick it off with?
Yes, let's do that. I sat on the settee yesterday afternoon, Rob. I don't often do that, but I was absolutely shattered. I had been at a hen do on Saturday, so I missed Saturday's action, but I did watch it all on Sunday.
How much of it did you see?
I literally watched the whole thing.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. This is very unlike me, but no, I watched all of Sunday's, the men's and the women's, the enduro. So on Sunday, they had to do 3 mini triathlons and it was brilliant.
Wasn't it?
So
really
good
exciting
to watch. So they had to do swim bike run, but after each discipline 2 people were thrown out. So if you were at the back of that very first swim, that's it, 300 meters, game over. And then if the gap between
palpitations, Helen, my day's over.
Exactly.
I'm first out.
If that gap between the leader and you know the people behind, anyone who was 90 seconds back or over 90 seconds back was automatically
You're done.
Out. And they'd show this yellow flag when they came back into transition. So it's almost like if you saw a yellow flag, you'd know that your day was over in the enduro. And they only had 6 people finishing six finished the women's race. So then they were like known as the Super 6. But it was just so much fun to watch and to see who was going to be eliminated. And the men's race was insane.
I only saw little bits and bobs of clips of it. I was skipping in and out as I was doing other stuff, watching the Facebook feed, and thought it looked really like it looked amazing location and really sort of exciting viewing. But I didn't get any of the who did what, where, when, and who finished where. So it sounds like it was top.
It really was. And you could watch it on, in fact, you can probably go back, Rob, and watch it on the BBC iPlayer.
Oh, right, cool. I didn't realise it was on the BBC as well. I knew it was on like the live feeds. That's great.
Yeah, so there'll be all the coverage on the live feed. BBC were streaming it as well. So that's where I watched it, on the BBC iPlayer. And it was just great. So in that men's race yesterday, you had Vincent Louis, Henry Schoeman, Christian Blumenfeld, Johnny Brownlee, and Richard Murray, the 5 of them.
Brilliant.
Just battling it out, and it was so cool to watch.
Yeah, sounds good. And scores on the doors, who took the wins?
So overall, Vincent Louis won. So he got $20,000. Nice paycheck there. Henry
Very
Schoeman,
good.
second, finished second overall. And then Christian Blumenfeld, third overall. And you know how I always say he's my favourite Norwegian, and I just love how he races, and he just gives it the beans every time he's on that start line.
Love it.
Well, the commentators agreed. They were saying, look at him go, look at him, and sort of like laughing.
Helen's favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. And then overall in the women, Katie Zafiris took the overall win ahead of Cassandra Beaugrand of France, and then Kirsten Casper was third. And yeah, Katie Zafiris, it was between her and Cassandra Beaugrand on day two. They both could have come away with this overall win, but Katie Zafiris was just, she was in another league. It was
Just nailed it, did she?
absolutely nailed it. So yeah, fantastic racing. Love the format. And they go to Malta next. That's going to be the next round. So a little bit warmer, I think, because
Yeah.
it looked so cold yesterday in Jersey. And of course, they don't wear wetsuits because it's such a short style of racing. So I think like air temperature was
Bit chilly.
60, water temperature 16, air temperature 17, I think.
We had somebody on the Facebook group who was actually there who had, did you see? She had a photo of herself with a little lion.
I didn't see that.
She posted in the Oxygenetic Triathlon community page. We put a thread up that said, oh, it looks ace this. And she's like, it's even better in real life. Good on you. I wish I could find it.
Awesome.
Can't find it. It's not here. Darn it. Never
There you
mind.
go.
There we go.
Check it out though. Have a little Google and go and watch the Super League highlights if you did not catch it at the weekend, because it was superb.
Good stuff. Now, the next up over in Ironman Chattanooga, which we traditionally pronounce with a Geordie accent for some reason, Chattanooga.
Don't know why.
record rains and major flooding. So they're having the old British summertime over there as well. So swim cancelled, shifted it to 116-mile bike leg and a marathon. So they had like a time trial start. And Cody Beals takes a second win for the year. So he did a Christian Blumenfeld Hells, and he gave it the beans over the first 30 miles and put time into everybody and basically just held on to that gap that he built in the first hour and a half, held it all the way to the finish. I think he ended up with an 11-minute victory over Matt Russell. And I think Kirill Kostogarov was in third. So yeah, tough way to race an Ironman that I think in a time trial start where no one knows where anybody is around you. Hey.
No, that is really, really, oh, that is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah,
But
sure
yeah,
is.
hey, so some of these big races this year have been affected by the weather, haven't
You
they?
really got a feel for people, haven't you? You train, put so much time into training for the biggest race of your life, especially if you're a first timer, and to have the swim cancelled, it'd just kill you, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was a one, I don't know if we mentioned it a few weeks ago, but it was when I was away, and the photos of Zell Am Zee with the snow on the mountains,
Yeah.
and I was thinking, oh my
Yeah, yeah.
God, like what,
Yeah.
3 years ago when I had been there, and I think they had unseasonably lovely weather when we were there for the 70.3 World Championships, but yeah, it was just so cold.
It just happened overnight, didn't it? And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I gave a little bit of a chat about that at the time because I had a couple of guys signed up to race it, and they were like, I was getting texts on race morning going, you are not going to believe this. Like, here's the photo out of the hotel window. And I was like, what? Because it looks like a
What?
scene from, midwinter in
In the
a
Alps.
ski resort. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good. All right, listen, I think what we're going to do next, we're going to jump into our interview of the week. We'll come back to Coach's Couch after Hells.
Great
So,
idea.
interview of the week, as we said, Elliot Smales. Now, this interview is sponsored by foodcell.co.uk. Now, remember, they've got a competition running. FuelCell is, I think, the coolest and nattiest little invention around at the moment to carry your gels and flapjacks and whatever else you want to take out on your 70.3 or Ironman with you. Really cool way of connecting it onto your bike. You can take it on and off. You can clean it. It's got a little slider that means you can get your stuff in and out when you're riding, which, is surprisingly important, being able to actually get the food out of the food carrier that you've put on your bike.
Very important, yep.
Very important indeed. So you can win one of three of these free food cells by following them on Twitter and Instagram. And they are at FlowCell Europe. Send them a message with the hashtag food cell in there. So it's at Flow Cell Europe. We've had some questions about this. At Flow Cell Europe, but the hashtag has got to be hashtag food cell. All of this is in the show notes, so don't worry about writing it down now. And names go into a hat. You get pulled out at random just before Kona. And everyone who enters gets a 25% off code for their first purchase. And remember, you can also use the code KONA20 to get 20% off. So you're a winner either way with that one. We had people mention that they got in touch, didn't we, Hels?
Yeah, I've had a couple of people saying that they bought one. So definite listener to the show, and a friend of mine got in touch saying, what is it that you're talking about, Helen? And I think, oh, it's Food Cell, and it's over at foodcell.co.uk. And then I hear that Dave Moulding as well, listener to the show, who is going to be doing Ironman Barcelona, I think I have this correct, and apparently his bike was picked up and he had a Food Cell on his bike.
Happy days. Best of luck, Dave, over at Ironman Barcelona. Right then, so let's jump in. Interview of the week is Elliot Smales, three-time winner of 70.3s in the UK this year. He's taken down Staffordshire, Weymouth and Dunleary in Dublin. So we got in touch with him. We've been saying all season, haven't we, Hels? We need to get this guy on and we managed to track him down. So here we go. Here's our interview of the week. All right. So we're joined by Elliot Smales. Elliot, congratulations, man. You've been pretty much the dominant 70.3 triathlete in the UK this season with, let me get this right, you've had wins at Staffordshire, then at Dunleary in Dublin, and then recently at Weymouth as well. So brilliant, man. Congratulations. It's lovely to have you join us on the show. First up, you've just had Ironman 70.3 Weymouth. How are your legs feeling? Have you recovered yet?
Yeah, I'm actually all right from the weekend, to be quite honest. I think it was a day for everyone, more of a battle of attrition and getting round the course rather than posting any super quick times. So the legs are actually fine after the weekend. Got back into training all right. Done a bit of swimming and running this morning. So
yeah, well, I was impressed because we've been trying to work out the time for the interview and you were like, oh, well, make it a bit later in the day, man, because I've got to go train. And I was thinking, if this had been me, I'd be lying in an ice bath still. But from the sounds of it, Weymouth 70.3 pretty much was an ice bath the whole way around, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You had some pretty brutal conditions. How did the race play out for you? Give us your take on how that whole thing went. Let's kick off with that.
Yeah, so Weymouth at the weekend was, in all honesty, I was quite low on motivation to race on the day.
Okay.
It's nice at this time of year. I'm normally low on motivation, or last year I was, to race at this time of year, full stop. But this year I've planned it a bit better, done all right, and I'm still motivated to race so late in the year. But come the day at Weymouth with the rain and the weather and stuff, it was a bit, I don't think anyone was really looking forward to it too much. But yeah, so started off with a swim and I didn't actually even get in for a swim warm-up, it was that bad. So I went in, I just swung my arms around a little bit, got into the swim, and I swam absolutely shocking up to the second buoy, so that's only myself to blame, and that's probably why. But then from the last buoy in back into the beach, I got into my rhythm, and I think I swam up to Nils and maybe took 15 seconds out of the other guys, which over a 9:50 swim, when they've shortened it, there's nothing much I can really do. I need a bit longer, but I did the best I could with that. And then transition, I took a bit of extra time to put some more layers on. So I'd been out the day before and bought a long sleeve base layer and borrowed a Gabba jersey off a friend who got down with me, because I've been in conditions like that before in Austria last year, and I know I DNF'd there, even though I had gloves on and arm warmers and I still got too cold, couldn't ride hard enough to stay warm. So I think that was a big thing that helped me get around at the weekend. I don't think I'd have finished without the jersey on. And then yeah, on the bike I felt a little bit flat still. Like, I've raced quite a lot after Worlds, that took a lot out of me, and then I raced a French Grand Prix for a Division 2 team last weekend, so a sprint race, and my body's not always that used to that, so trying to run against those guys hurts a little bit. But I didn't have too much on the bike near the beginning, which I don't normally anyway. It takes me a bit of a time to warm up into the bike. But I just put my head down and thought, I'll just go at my own rhythm. And then around 10 miles, I got to there last year, and I had to pull out last year because I'd crashed the week before. And I got to there and I wasn't like super motivated still, but that was kind of the deciding point where I was like, right, I'm going to finish because I need mentally to finish a race like this. It doesn't matter on the position. I was like, this will be good for me to actually get round to a race when I know I'm struggling. And I thought, like, with all the people and the volunteers out on the course and stuff in in the rain. I was like, oh, well, if they're out there all day, like, I can do 4 hours, I'm sure. So I carried on the bike, and then it ended up paying off, but maybe not the way I'd have wanted it to. So obviously, George Goodwin, Will Clark and Nils Frommold were up the road, and I was in fourth. And George, he just got too cold, he said, at about 38 miles, and he had to stop, but he was absolutely flying. He was having a really good race. Unfortunately, Will punctured maybe 5-6 miles later, managed to fix it, but then was too cold to carry on. And then probably 2 miles after Will punctured, Nils punctured. And it's a bit annoying, it's a bit frustrating like that, and it's a bit like I'm gutted for him, because I know how well they were racing on the day, and I know how well it was going for him. But I suppose in some ways it's a little bit kit choice and stuff like that. Like I ran my tyres at maybe 60-65 PSI on Sunday, and it, stuff like that can make a difference, but I think it's just unfortunate when stuff like that happens to people.
Yeah, it's hard in a way, isn't it? Because you want to race your best competitors on the best day. And there is like this massive element of bad luck for them as well. But there's also this element, like you said, of we had a discussion straight after Weymouth on the show about loads of people were writing in and saying, like, what do you do? How do you race in the weather when it's like this? What do you wear? How do you stay warm? I was absolutely freezing. And I think a lot of people's perceptions is you race in the skin suit regardless of what the weather is. And if you live in, if you get weather like that and you live in Great Britain, it'd be so good for people to hear like the winner of the pros race say, look, man, I put a long sleeved proper rain jersey type thing on just to try and stay warm. And that's what made all the difference, because it's actually physically too cold to get around it otherwise, right? So equipment choice definitely plays a part in your success, doesn't it?
Yeah, massively. Like I think, but like you say, I think you have to experience this once and suffer the consequences in order to understand, because like last year I was exactly the same. I raced in a no-sleeve tri-suit. I was like, I'll chuck some arm warmers on, I'll chuck some gloves on, I'll be absolutely fine. And I wasn't. So the conditions this year, I knew that like the day before I went out to buy stuff, I was like, I know I need this. And I was like, I'll borrow this. I took a gilet just in case. I had gloves in my pocket just in case. But I think there is a lot on aero at the minute, and it does make a huge difference. Like, see the differences it can make. But at the end of the day, if you're not going to finish the race, it doesn't matter how aero you are. So the jersey to me was the trade-off of I'll finish in the jersey. The suit I'm wearing is really aero, I know that. But if I'm not going to finish, there's no point wearing the suit.
That's totally it, isn't it? And I think that the takeaway for most age groupers is, look, most of us are racing just to try and cross the finish line and have that amazing experience of running down the chute. So let's do everything you can to like actually get round in other conditions.
Yeah.
So listen, let's go back a little bit, because I do want to talk about this amazing season you've had with all the wins and stuff. But I was doing a little bit of research, and I came across an old post from about 5 years ago where you were racing, I think at Windsor for Planet X at the time. And and the photograph of you, look about 11 years old in this photo. I was like, wow, how old is this kid? So like, how did you get into triathlon in the first place? And like, firstly, how old are you at the moment?
I turned 24 on Sunday at Weymouth, so I had a bit of
birth. Still a youngster, yeah.
A lot of birthday luck, yeah. But I got into it properly probably just before I came to university. So I graduated last year, and I've been in Leeds for this is my fifth year in Leeds now.
Okay.
But yeah, I know exactly the picture you're on about from Windsor. I don't know when that was, but I know that was probably a bit of a breakthrough race where I'd actually managed to get a top 10. Super Series, and I was doing something crazy, like 8 races in 8 weekends or something really silly. But I got into it properly when I came to university, so back in 2013, but I was racing a couple of Super Series races in 2011, 2012 probably.
Okay, and you said you're at Leeds, so obviously you've got that whole, that's where it's all happening. You've got the Brownies winning the Olympics in 2012. Yep. It's all happening in Leeds. So talk about being at the right place at the right time for motivation and training partners, right?
Yeah, it's been one of the biggest things. I think training in the group and training with people is one of the number one things that has brought me on. We've managed to make such a good group around us in the past probably 3 years that there's always someone there to train with. There's always someone pushing you. There's always a ride going out. There's always a run, like, and it's good. And it's only over the past year I've kind or 2 years maybe that I've moved away from the university centre as such a little bit. Obviously with the change in distance and stuff, it's more focused to the Olympic distance and the World Cups, World Series, European Cups. So I've kind of taken on a little bit myself, but I'm still involved with, for riding and running, I'm still involved with the groups for most things.
Yeah, okay. And the transition that happened sort of towards moving towards racing the 70.3, which is obviously you've got a real talent for racing at this distance. How did that initially play out for you? How did you move away from the shorter distance and into 70.3?
It's something I've always wanted to do, and it's something I've always been kind of told not to do, just because I was obviously so young. Like when I started racing this distance, I was 21 when I started doing the Castle Series, and it was 3 years ago. So it was always like, no, work on your speed, like keep going. But I don't think I was really ready for the European Cup stuff when I was racing it, and it's hard to get experience in those races because once you've had a chance, you're not going to get in again. But right. Then you don't know how to race the race because you haven't actually done one. I eventually, I think in my third year, the coach in Leeds left. So it opened up a little bit in that in my fourth year, my last year, I had to make the decision of, right, what am I doing after university and what am I doing triathlon-wise? So that gave me a year to go, well, right, I may as well try and race 70.3 this year. I'll race what I want to race and see if I'm any good at it. I did four of the Castle Series races and won every single one of them. But that was in order to, and then when I realised that I could actually do the distance all right, then I thought, oh, maybe I'll apply for a pro licence and see how that goes. Got that last year. And then, 70.3 Staffordshire last year was my first Ironman event. I'd done a challenge race earlier in the year and finished fourth. And then Staffordshire, I got a podium at my first ever Ironman. So I was like, oh, maybe I can actually do this. That's a big thing with me, like, self-belief, I suppose, is like quite low sometimes. So okay. I think that's one key thing that's kind of unlocked this year a little bit.
That's interesting to hear, because obviously, you know, we from the outside see the headlines, and you know, we've been talking about you on the show, and it's like Elliot's won again, like, to win three of the four 70.3s in the UK, like, as far as all the age groups are concerned, you're the man. So to hear you talking about the fact that your mindset, sometimes your motivation needs some working on, that's really interesting. Yeah. What is it a case with you that your confidence comes from seeing results, or has it been the other way around? Have you worked on your confidence and that's kind of led you to having better results?
I think it has. It's probably come more from the results, but it's grown slowly over the past year. And like you say, I think it is good for all the age groupers who are looking from the outside to see it, as it's probably not as they see it. Training in Leeds, training with the guys that are here, they're all so good that sometimes you look at it and you're like, oh, I'm absolutely nowhere near these guys. Like, I'm terrible. And then you go into a race when you're not racing the people that you're around all the time. You're like, oh, actually, maybe we're all quite good as a group and this is why the results are coming. But yeah, Staffordshire this year was a major target. And my aim this year was to maybe try and win Staffordshire, if not definitely podium there. And then when I actually pulled it off, that was a eureka moment of, oh, I set out with a race plan and I executed it and it worked. And I was like, oh, and I won. So that was a major point in this year. And I think that's made a difference at, say, something like Dunleary when I went there and the same opportunity was available. When I took it, it was 100 times. It felt a lot more natural than it did at Staffordshire. In some
right.
ways,
yeah.
In like I believed all the way around that I could do it. Whereas Staffordshire, on the first lap of the run, I know people ask me, on the first lap of the run, I didn't think I was going to finish the race, even though I was still leading.
Is that right?
Yeah, I thought I'd spent so much on the bike, I didn't think I could finish. And then the only reason I continued on the second lap is because I thought, well, I'll probably finish top five if I keep running, no matter how slow I go. So I was like, well, I'll keep going because top five, I'll pay for my rent for a month or something like that. And then it was only really the last lap it kind of dawned a bit like, oh, actually, yeah, I'm probably going to win this now.
They're not
yeah.
catching me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you ran the whole half marathon thinking it was game over and you were about
yeah,
to detonate
yeah.
in 2 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think I felt that bad on a half.
Wow. That's
maybe the last 2.5K of Worlds, but that's another story.
Well, that just goes to show, doesn't it, that sometimes your body's got so much more in it than your mind thinks it has, and you can keep on going.
It shows how much of a head game it is, though. Like, how your head can trick you, even though your body's got it, but it's always your head making you think, nah, you've not got this, or you... And it's how you change that to, yeah, you have got this, but I don't know how to do that yet. Still working on it.
Yeah, well, we often say, don't we, the mindset's such a big part of it. So it's really interesting to hear you say that, man. So let me ask you a little bit about, I was reading about Dunleary, which for people who don't know is basically 70.3 Dublin under a different name, isn't it? You raced Andy Potts there, and obviously you've probably grown up seeing Andy Potts lead out the swim at Ironman Hawaii pretty much every year, right? So he's a big name. And how did it feel sort of racing head to head with him at Dunleary? Were you intimidated by the big name, or was he just like another person?
Of course I was. No, I was intimidated by the big name, definitely there. He's got a lot of accolades to his name, and I was like a one-time 70.3 winner in the UK. So I set out with a race plan of, I'll try and swim as close to Andy Potts as possible, and then I'll just see how the bike goes. I know he's quite a big guy, and I knew the bike was hilly there, which suits me better because I'm a lot smaller than he is. And then, I managed to... So my tactic was just get straight on his feet, and I did that, and it was quite easy, to be fair, on the swim. There was another guy, Sigurdsson from... I think he's from Iceland or Norway.
Yeah.
From Iceland, possibly, yeah. And he's a really good swimmer, so he was leading us out. And then I don't know whether the cold water made a bit of a difference to Andy, because a lot of the Americans were saying it was really cold, but I thought 16 degrees for the Irish Sea was pretty good. So,
yeah, you're like, happy days.
Yeah, I was like, that's right. And then, got onto the bike, and I just decided to ride the first 10 minutes as hard as I could, because it was slightly uphill, to get rid of him. And that kind of worked, and I gapped him a little bit through transition. I think that's a big thing that's helped. Coming from the shorter distance, I took 13 seconds in transition, which is just free time to me, like, as long as you just get everything right and smooth.
Yeah, and then that's 100 metres, isn't it, on the road? You're out of sight when you come out of transition. That can be massive at your level, can't it?
The out of sight, out of mind thing is the way it kind of goes, I think. I think that's what happened in Staffordshire, and I definitely think that's what happened in Dunleary as well. But on the bike later on, that became another battle against the elements at the top of Sally Gap and stuff, like 30-mile-an-hour crosswinds and a bit of rain. Yeah, I went off the road at one point and had to stop and
really
drag the bike out, like get back onto the road out of a ditch. And I didn't fall off the hill, but yeah.
Amazing. And then you went to the World Championships this year, and like, of all the years to go to the 70.3 World Championships, having watched how it played out, it was, I mean, again, in the lead up to this, I was watching the video clips that were up on the Ironman website. It was just a smash fest at the front of that race, wasn't it? How was your experience going to that? And obviously you've said your mindset is, you know, you feel a bit like, oh, I've won a couple of 70.3s almost by accident. So how was it turning up to a race like that and having, well, let's say you had Gomez, Brownlee, Jan Frodeno, Ben Canute,
Sam Appleton.
Yeah, Sam Appleton as well. Talk us through how that was for you then.
Yeah, so the Worlds was probably mentally one of the best races for me all year, because I went into that with no pressure whatsoever. I went into that to gain experience racing the best guys in the world, which obviously I got with the field that turned up. It's probably one of the best fields I've ever had.
Probably the best field ever at 70.3, and
there was no pressure on what result I got. I went in my head, I thought, if I get a top 20, I'll be happy. And I was like, if I pulled anything else off, I'd be ecstatic. So I went to just gain experience, really. The swim was a little bit frustrating. It was kind of like, I should have probably made the front pack, but at the end of the day, would it have made too much difference on the outcome of the race? Maybe not. So, but then I've also, because of how the races have gone this year, I went with an aim of, I wanted to run well, because I knew at Worlds there'd probably be a pack and not a lot had happened on the bike, and it would lead to a quicker run. And because of how Staffordshire and Dunleary went, with like riding off the front all day and getting onto the run tired and more hanging on, I didn't know where my running was, and I wanted to... The run was always like a trump card for me last year over this distance. Like, I could do all right on the run against most people, so I wanted to see if that was still there. So I did that goal as well. Like, I ran, I think, just over 73.30 at Worlds, which for me, like, I was happy with that.
Super quick, yeah. And it's up there, isn't it, with the fast times on the day as well.
Well, yeah, but then the fastest, the slowest run in the top 20, people are running like 76. So it's just such, it was such a fast field this year. And but then looking at the top guys, that watching that race and being a part of that race was amazing to see. Like, the distance between us and them was so far that, but it gives you something to aim at, and you know where you need to be. And I don't think they'll be much faster than what we saw there. Yeah. I think that's when you've got three of the best racers in the sport all going against each other, having no problems, and they've all got to race each other. That's what's going to be produced.
Yeah, yeah, awesome. Hey, so listen, let's talk a little bit about your training. And obviously, people are always keen to kind of try and pick up tips. So you've mentioned you're up at Leeds. You've got big squads to train with all the time. Mm-hmm. What would a standard week look like for training for you in terms of how many times you swim, bike, and run first up?
So maybe some people would be surprised, but since I started as a swimmer and moving through the 4 years in Leeds, I used to swim probably five times, like Monday to Friday, I'd swim. I've actually stepped down and I only swim three times a week now. The sessions are more focused and probably each one is quite intense rather than maybe one being a drill session where you concentrate on stuff for an hour and then another being a bit of like long, slow distance. I've got three sessions now where Monday, Wednesday, Friday mornings, I'll get in with Leeds Masters, which are quite a good bunch of swimmers. Like, there's some guys that can push me there, which is quite nice. And the group's forming there a little bit. So I don't swim with anyone from the Leeds squads really anymore, unless a couple of lads, because there's a couple who race a bit of 70.3. They jump in sometimes. And then, so yeah, swimming three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm running in the winter and into season probably anywhere between 70 and 80 miles, and it'll be up to 10 runs probably, so double in a few days of the week. Normally when, so Monday will be a bit of an easier day where I'll maybe run probably 50 minutes. Tuesday I'll get up, run 4 miles real steady in the morning, and then do a session on the evening, whether that be track when we move into summer or sometimes it's road in the winter. Wednesdays is the big volume day, so I'll swim, I'll run for 50 minutes, then we'll go out and do a long steady ride, probably in the winter, it's maybe like 4 hours, then I'll do the same run as the morning again, so getting nearly 40 miles running in on a Wednesday.
Okay.
And then Thursday is no swim, do the long run, the run straight away, so probably 50 minutes again, and then this winter I'm going to move into a session on a Thursday. It's hard sometimes, it's been hard to do it outside, so I'm going to switch that to an inside session for the winter, and then when it comes to summer it's a chain gang on a Thursday, or I'll go out and do TT efforts.
So that's kind of your key intensity bike ride, is it? You'll do that indoors on the turbo in the winter.
I've not done nearly any enough work I want to do on the bike, which is nice because I have somewhere to go. And
it's terrifying for anyone you're racing to hear that.
I've got a clear trajectory of what I want to do. So I know I've not done 25% of the stuff I want to do on the bike, and I know what I need to do, and it's all set out. And I'm kind of looking forward to getting onto that in winter now, because I know it can make such a difference, even though my bike's improved this year through doing the same stuff I've always done and minor changes.
Yeah.
Then Friday I'll swim, easy run, done by lunchtime, so that you got a good nearly 24 hours off before moving into Saturday morning grass run session. So that'll be slightly longer reps, probably a total session of maybe half an hour, but total run maybe 11 miles, including like the warm up, the reps, and then a bit of a jog and run home. And then a three and a half hour bike, nice and steady after that run on a Thursday, normally a cafe stop when we're in Leeds anyway, so that's quite nice to break it up. I think it makes a big difference on the Saturday when you're carrying the run session in your legs. And then Sunday mornings I'll do, in winter we've got a nice little, it's a 13, 14 mile loop, and we'll do half an hour steady on that to run out, and then we'll do some tempo pace. So we'll run at about 3:45k pace, do 15 minutes on, 5 minutes off, 10 minutes on, 5 minutes off, 5 minutes on, and then we'll do 4-3-2-1 all at the same pace with 1 minute in between.
Okay.
And it just gets the long run done a little bit quicker, and it's quite a nice loop for it. We've got it all planned out, so like no road crossing and stuff like that. It fits in nicely. And then just a long ride on a Sunday after that. Depends how hard the week's been. Might do 3 hours, might do 4.5, but yeah, probably totaling anywhere between 27 and 32 hours, like on a really big week, but normally nearer to 30.
Yeah. All right. Now, let me ask you about the run paces and stuff a little bit, because you said you're doing big mileage there. It was, what did you say, 70 miles a week kind of area, something like
normally
that?
Normally it's between 70 and 80. 80 would be the biggest week, but I wouldn't really go over that.
Okay. And how much of that running that you do is at what you would describe to be like an easy or steady pace?
You're probably looking at 80% of it. There's only two sessions a week that I'd say are at a hard pace.
Right, gotcha. And you were saying you were possibly running, what, 10 times a week with the double run days and things like that, would you? Yeah, that's because that's an interesting point for age groups, I think, is that we have this perception that even pros are going to do lots of hard running. But then the ratio of that is what you've just described as like a half an hour main set one day and a 45 minute main set another day. And then what's probably, what, 10 hours of running, is it? Something like that?
About 10 hours total, yeah. Probably average.
Wow.
We only average 8 minute miles. It's nothing crazy.
Say that again.
We probably average 8 minute miles, yeah.
So pro triathlete, winner of multiple 70.3s, does most of his running at 8 minute miles. I love this because it's so important for people to hear, because everyone assumes you're scampering around at 5:30s all the time.
Yeah, exactly. There
was, someone posted the other day that, I can't remember who it was, one of the really good marathon runners does a lot of his running at 9 minute miles, and they're going, but he's just run like a 2:01 marathon, or how does that work? And it's that sort of the thing you expect people to be doing is not always the thing that makes them fast. You know, it's not the speed work that matters. It's the consistent mileage that matters. So you don't pick up the injuries, right?
Yeah. Consistency to me is the key to triathlon. I think once you've got the consistency, that's when you can move forwards and start adding the bits of intensity in and stuff like that. But yeah, the biggest thing I see is people just running too fast, like on training runs, on easy runs. Like, for example, the running squad up here who are getting back together, they do a run on an evening, and like I think the front group goes out. If you're not running 7 minute miles or quicker, you're in like the slower group. So like none of us would make the faster group even. But then you see a lot of athletes that are getting injured in that group, and then you put two and two together and well, it's probably where it's coming from. But I've always been working on the miles, and I've, touch wood, like been free from injury this year, not had any problems, and 70 to 80 miles seems about right for me.
Yeah, good. Awesome, man. And what part does testing play in your sort of, I don't know, if we played it out over a season, over the winter or whatever, how often would you test in swimming or biking or running so you kind of know where you're at?
Swimming's a thing where I kind of just know when I've got the feel for the water and I'm going all right. And
so it's more of like a perceptual thing, is it?
For swimming, like I'll obviously
it's alchemy, isn't it? Swimming's more about like an art than a science.
Yeah, swimming's the biggest one with technique, I reckon, out of the three sports. So I know when I'm swimming well, I know what times roughly I'm hitting. But if I feel good hitting that time, I know I'm swimming well.
Okay.
So, and my swimming only fluctuates by maybe 5-10 seconds all year anyway, over say like a 400. So there's not much difference. I know that if I have a break from swimming, say for 3 weeks at the end of the season now, it takes me a long, long time to get the feel for the water back and a long, long time to get swimming again. So this year, that's something I probably won't do. I'll probably continue swimming even after I finish racing.
Yeah. Okay. And what about on the bike? How do you monitor your progress on the bike?
So the bikes, I'm still learning the bike a little bit. Like I said, I've not done anywhere near the amount of stuff I want to do on it. And that's what's going to come into play from, say, October, November, from now. So I've got a power meter now from Rota, which I've started to get some numbers from so that I can use moving into the winter. And I'll have to do some testing for that. I'll probably have to go and do a VO2 max test or an FTP. And then hopefully I can use those numbers on that Thursday session to really work on the time trialing. the rest of my riding will still be, like the running, the rest of the riding will probably still be relatively easy, or as easy as it can be in Yorkshire, like with the hills and stuff. Yeah, the rest of the riding will probably be quite easy in a group, and then maybe a bit of, like, on a Wednesday, we sometimes do a bit of tempo, like chain gang on the way home, but that helps the lads out. We're still racing the drafting stuff. Like, it just helps, it lets me help them out a little bit for them training with me, if you get it, so.
Got you, yeah. Yeah, so it sounds like you're really at the start of that journey of doing the real sort of focused, improve your FTP bike work that, I mean, man, if you've got to this level without what we would describe as like the focused structured interval training, it's going to be terrifying to see what you can do next season.
Yeah, I hope it makes quite a big difference. The numbers I've been getting from races and stuff, it's good to look at that, because that shouldn't be too far off. If that's what I'm racing at when I'm by myself for the whole ride, it shouldn't be too far off what I'm going to be looking at. But from what I've seen, I think there should definitely be some improvement in there.
Yeah, good. And let's talk a little bit about the reality of being a young pro. You're a year out of university. You sort of alluded earlier to the fact, like, you had that thought, what am I going to do next year? And most university leavers go through this. It's time to think about getting a job. Yeah. And it looks like this is playing out really nicely for you. But what's the reality of trying to race pro like? You're obviously training 30-odd hours a week, so it's hard to fit working around that.
Yeah, I think this is another thing when people look in from the outside a bit and they think, oh, he must be doing so well, like he's just like cushy or whatever. But I have to reassess every October whether it's viable to even continue doing triathlon really as such. But it's nice this year that decision was made quite early in the summer, that right, the year's gone pretty well, there's no point in me stopping now, I'm at least going to race next year. So it was nice to make that decision quite early in the summer. But yeah, you've got to live as there's not a great expenditure in the life, and like I say, you do so much training anyway, there's not a lot of time to do a lot of other stuff. We mostly just train and then socialize, and that's about it, and we don't really do much else. But yeah, it's kind of like I'm living off prize money at the minute, so I have to do well at the races in order to survive, basically. If I don't do well at the races, then the triathlon dream ends. But looking this year, it's gone well enough to at least continue doing it next year, so hopefully build on what I've done this year.
Is there much available in way of, like, people talk about sponsors, and obviously having won three headline events in the UK, I'm assuming for you next year it's going to be much easier to pick up some better deals with the sponsors. Is there, and I know the standard line is like companies are happy to give away kit, but it's much harder to get money to be paid for stuff, even with bonuses. Is that something that you think will hopefully make life easier next year? Is there much by way of that going on, or is it still you looking at living off prize money?
At the minute, I'm still looking at living off prize money. The sponsors I sought after this year who've made a massive difference. So like the bike that I got from Reap made a massive difference.
Yeah.
With the wheels that Joseph set us up, Joseph from Hedge UK set us up with the wheels for that as well. Massive difference, because I think the bike last year was really holding me back. There was some silly stuff like Weymouth last year. I couldn't get the gears to shift, so I just did the limiter screws, put it in the 54, and was like, I'll ride the old course and that doesn't matter. But that reflects like the motivation I had at that time of year. I was a bit like, the bike's not working, I don't want to race. Like, it got a bit frustrating, but luckily they stepped in to help us out there, and then managed to get Rotor on board as well, so I can use the power meter. And I've always ridden Rotor Q-rings since 2012 on the road bike, I think, anyway. So that was one that I really wanted to get on board, because I was like, right, I'm already riding the stuff, but if I can like help them out a bit. Like, for example, went down to the bike show with them yesterday and spent the day talking to people about the products, and that was a good day out. But so I only really sought after sponsors.
It was around the kit that you wanted rather than...
Yeah, it was more the kit I needed to further my racing. I wasn't really focusing on, I need financial incentive to like, or financial help to survive. I was like, right, if I can get this kit, I know I can race better. It's the same with like the swim kit, Hoob. Like, I wanted to be in a Hoob wetsuit. I'd swam in other wetsuits. So I approached Dino and was like, well, I really like this suit and I know I swim faster in it. And it was stuff like that. Like, I just wanted to be in the best kit to get the most out of myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, who knows, man? Maybe people start knocking at the door now and there's valuable real estate on your chest as you're tearing around these 70.3 run courses for sure. Yeah. All right, man. Listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know we said we'd wrap this up in half an hour and we're just about there. So it's been great hearing your story. Just the final question for you. Next season, what's the big goal? Have you decided yet?
Yeah, next season, the big goal will be Nice World Champs. I've already qualified through Dunleary and the course should suit me a lot better out there. It's a 900 meter climb from sea level and being 60, 61 kilos, like that
will really suit you, won't it?
Yeah, so hopefully next year in about July, I'll get out there to do a bit of a training camp and check out the course, because I think with the climb and the descent, there'll be a lot of time to be made there. And if I'm going to take it serious, we need to try and crack a top 10, if not a top 5 there.
Good lad. Awesome stuff. And last up, are you on social? Where can people find out more about you, Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff?
Yeah, I normally use Instagram quite a lot, so I think it's just it should just be Elliot Smales on Instagram or something along those lines. Search that and there'll probably be a picture of me holding some tape up or something. That'll be a picture. And then on Twitter as well. That's normally for the race reports and reviews and stuff like that. That'll go on there.
Good. All right, brilliant. Well, listen, man, thank you so much for your time.
Nah, thank you for having me on. It's been good.
Great interview there with Elliot Hells. And I was super impressed with his honesty there. Like the part where he was talking about how a mile into the run at Staffordshire, which is a race that he won, he was going, I don't think I'm even going to get to the finish line. It's only a matter of time before I get caught. So, like, how many age groups? Yeah. How many age groupers have that thought? I can't do this. This guy's leading it and he has the same thoughts.
All the time. And you sort of think that you're the only one going through that, but clearly not.
It must go through everybody's mind. I'd love to know if it's the same thing like Jan Frodeno or Katie Zafiras or whoever, whether they're thinking, I'm just not going to make it to the finish.
The amount of pros that we have interviewed over the past 3-4 years who have alluded to those questions of self-doubt, you know, it's surprisingly, I'd say it's more the majority than the minority, actually.
Yeah, and I think that's a lesson for us to think when we're racing, do you know what, yeah, it hurts, but everybody feels like this, literally everybody, not just me, everybody feels like they want to stop, just keep on going.
That's it, you'll get there eventually.
Yeah, too right. All right, let's jump into Coach's Couch then.
Yeah, so Rob, this is sponsored by Team Oxygen Addict, isn't it? And we are going to talk about the time training system, because I keep on seeing this in the Oxygen Addict community Facebook page. And I'm like, come on, what is it? So why did you come up with it?
Right. So what this is basically we've got ourselves a fancy name for our methodology. That's what it is. I wanted to sit down and go, right, this is, rather than like there's 20 different things I teach people, we've combined it all into this one snappy little title, the time training system. And it's the way that I've been coaching 70.3 and Ironman athletes, you know, forever. It's the culmination of everything that I've put together over a lifetime of study and coaching. And it's all kind of distilled down into finally I can go, this is what it is. It's the time training system. So it's got a fancy title, Hells. That's the long and short of it. So
what does it stand for then?
Well, we'll come to the what it stands for in a second. The most important thing is who it's for, right? Because it's mainly aimed at two kinds of people. The first kind are the people who they dream about one day doing a 70.3 or an Ironman. Like, could I do that? Could I possibly manage to do that one day? So people who are first timers, not sure they could ever do it. It's a system that's going to help them. And it's also designed to incorporate people who think they've got the potential to improve. So anybody racing at age group level who thinks, I'm sure I can do better at this if only I had some kind of guideline and framework to fit it in. Does that make sense?
Yep, that makes sense.
Right. So the key thing that's always bugged me about racing 70.3 or Ironman is this kind of myth that it's got to take, you know, 20, 30 hours of training every week out of your life. And it's impossible to fit in around a normal life. And only these superhumans with shaved legs can do it. It's just not the case. Like, there's loads of examples that we know of people who've done it. But I think the perception from the outside is, you've got to dedicate yourself to it to be able to even do one. And then you've absolutely got to dedicate yourself even more to it to be able to get better at it. So this system is designed for people who are thinking, I can't do this because I can't get up at 5 a.m. every day. I can't deal with the family stress. I can't deal with the work disruption of constantly being training. So for those people, it's like a system to go, you can do this. And for people who are self-coached, it's a way to go, right, here's what your priorities are in training when you're time limited. Here's a way to cut through all the conflicting advice. Here's a way to stop yourself getting ill or injured. That's basically it.
Which snappy, makes huh? Yes, snappy. And Rob, I think...
Got to give you the overview.
Well, no, it is a very good overview. But I was going to say that I think I'm probably a good example of someone who made a lot of progress under that system, in that I would have come to you. You and I worked together for 5 years, and I would have come to you basically as a more of a plodding runner.
Oh, bless you. And in your head, maybe. I don't think I ever thought that.
No. I was more of a...
There's another example of somebody who doesn't see themselves the way somebody else does, but go on.
Well, I was going to say, I would have come to you as a plodding runner who liked challenges. And I think I had already even entered an Ironman.
You had, you'd entered Austria.
I had. And I said, I need some help getting some coaching towards this, because I literally didn't have a clue. And I would have probably run, you know, thought, oh yeah, you need to run like a marathon every week for, you know, from now until Ironman Austria. Clearly you do not. That is definitely not the way to do it. But I think over that 5 year period, I didn't ever, apart from if I was on a training camp, I'd say my average, what was around 9, 10, 11 hours a week.
Yeah, something like that, I think. And I think you're a really good example of someone who, I mean, God, you had crazy 5 a.m. starts for work, let alone try and fit training in before that, didn't you? You know, so someone who can be really successful at age group level and have really crazy shift work and busy professional life and all of that as well. So, like I said, the whole title, the time training system, right, it stands for TIME, and all I've done is kind of condensed it down into a way to remember what the four, I like to think of them as like the four cornerstones of your success of this are. So the T stands for testing and evaluating yourself. So that means we're going to regularly measure where you're at and measure your progression. The I stands for intensity, basically. It's the intelligent use of intensities. So we're going to make sure your training sessions always give you the most bang for the buck, and we do the thing that makes the most sense at the relative time of year. The M stands for mindset. So it's like building that mindset of confidence, not only through seeing those improvements week after week, but also because it's like a realistic week of training, you can complete it every week, and that leads you to a sense of, oh, okay, yeah, I definitely can do this because I've just done another week of training. And the E kind of all ties it together with effective effort. So it's making sure that every minute you spend training is having the biggest impact it can have on your progress, rather than, you know, anything being wasted effectively. So TIME, the time training system. How snappy is that?
It's very, very snappy.
Have you already had somebody text me today and go, I just love the title of this. Are you going to write a book? And I was like, I've had a nervous breakdown trying to make a webinar about it. I'm trying to write a book.
Don't go there on the book, Rob.
No. There's going to have to be some serious ghostwriting goes on before. Never say never, Hells.
Well, no, I'm telling you, you probably could write a book, but it's having done the two recipe books.
You can do it for me. There we go. Bingo. Nice volunteering, kid.
You know, before we came on air, we were talking about a book to do with, you know, about the art of not giving a So I'm just going to say off.
Okay, I got you right there. Oh, man. So listen, I'll not go on about this anymore. That's how my last 2 weeks has been. It's been coming up with this and refining it and blah, blah, blah. So if you're in and about on Facebook and stuff, keep a nosy out for it. I've made a webinar about it to go into more details. If you're interested, it'll be all over Facebook in the various groups. So please feel free to check it out. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, because it's going to be one of those things that we constantly refine, I think, Hells, over the years.
Nice. In time.
Yeah. All right, then. A bit of news action. And it's not good news, is it, all this week, really, looking at this? There's there's all kinds of stories of more people not going to make it to Kona, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. And so the one which let's start off with, because you did a great interview with him and he was in such good shape, but Terenzo Bozzoni has withdrawn from the World Championships because he had a crash earlier this year. And he just says that reality is, I'm not well enough in such a short time to compete. He said he put everything on the line, gave it his all to try and reach the start line. But he said, unfortunately, my body at just under 3 months following the horrendous crash isn't quite ready to compete at the level necessary and a level that would reflect the respect I have for the event and the competitors.
Oh, bless him. I emailed him about 3 weeks ago to see how it was going. And he said then, recovery's gone well and training's slowly progressing. I'm in Kona for a couple of weeks to see how I can bring up the form. So he's obviously made the decision for the smartest of reasons, hasn't he? And he's such a good guy. I'm so gutted for him.
Yeah, because he really, really was flying. But he says that the fire is still burning brightly in his belly. And he says, I will be back and can't wait.
Good lad.
Yeah, he was injured, wasn't he, during a training ride in July.
Yeah.
And I think he believes that he was knocked off his bike by a truck.
Yeah, he still doesn't know because he's got memory loss and got slammed so hard, didn't he? So,
yeah.
Bless him.
Horrible.
So, well,
horrible.
Glad he's still walking amongst us. You know what I mean?
Small
mercies and all of that.
Yeah, so he's out. And then
Mel Hauschild
has also said that she is out. She needs surgery. She's got a horrible injury which has formed in her right leg. And she says, you know, that basically triathlon's given her many ups and downs. But yeah, she is out. And she says good luck to all racing Kona. And then the other one, Rob, who has sort of given a bit of an insight into the horrible injuries that you really don't want at this time of year if you're preparing to race at the World Championships. Hella Fredriksson says that she's struggling with an injury in her left foot. She's not been able to run for 2 weeks, but she says she's still going to travel to Kona. She hopes to be able to start the race and go for a podium finish.
Wow, there's a lot in that last sentence, isn't there? I'm hoping to be able to start and go for a podium finish. Good girl, I like that attitude.
She's such a classy athlete. And
yeah,
when, you know, when she is, because it would be her first Kona as well. And
yeah,
when she's, you know, at the peak, she's really, really, what's a good word there, Rob?
Competitive amongst all of them.
Well, amongst absolutely.
The best
I mean,
in
she
the
would
world,
be
yeah.
going, yeah, she'd be absolutely going for a podium, wouldn't she?
Yeah, totally. That's a tough one. Hey, listen, talking of podiums, we had a little bit of banter on the Facebook group about who people thought was gonna be on top in Kona. So
who do you reckon Rob's gonna be up there?
I'm not being drawn yet, Hells. I've got another week before I release my.
Okay, fine. I've done mine today. I've written them on paper and everything.
Are you like set then? You're definitely set.
Well,
you decided it's not going to change.
No, not these three. You're not going to know because I had a big, big think about it today.
Right, so my gut says I want Lionel to win and I want Lucy Charles to win.
Okay. Is there a difference between want and who you think will win?
I think that if Lucy has her best day, she can put pressure on Daniela Ryf.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to see. I want to see a race between those two. And I think Lucy Charles has still got that kind of youngster's hunger towards it. You know, she's very new to it. And I think she's kind of got a nothing to lose mindset. Even though she finished second last year, I think she'll go out and race like she's got nothing to lose, which all the pressure's on Daniela Ryf, really, isn't it? Most people are going, it's hers to lose. So that's fine. But with that comes a lot of pressure. So I'm going with Lucy. I'm going with Lucy to crack her on the marathon.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
And I'm also going with Lionel Sanders just because I love the guy and I love watching his, have you seen his video blogs he's been putting out on YouTube? If you've not seen him, listeners, you can check it out. He's got a really cool film crew with him. And, do you remember he had that terrible race at Mont-Tremblant?
Yes.
few weeks ago. Well, terrible for him, where he basically fell apart on the run and finished second. Terrible in his words. Do you know what he did the next weekend?
Go on, tell me. I can imagine, but...
Have a guess. Go on.
Well, I imagine he probably went back to Mont-Tremblant and did it again and beasted himself or something similar
good,
like that.
Yeah,
or
good
just
try.
Locked himself in his pain cave.
So there's a tweak on the pain cave. He did an Ironman in training. So imagine that for a minute. On his own, 3.8K swim, got on his bike. Near where he lives, there's a 1 mile cycle track. He did 112 laps of that, practicing his nutrition strategy. And then he got off and he ran. He didn't do the whole marathon. I can't remember exactly how far he did, but maybe it was a half marathon at Kona pace. And it's just great watching, you know, I'll take my coach's hat off for a minute. I just love watching the guy. He's ace.
I think his attitude to hard work and his mental strength is something else.
Yeah, he's a rock star, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Him and Christian Blumenfeld, I'd love to watch them going head to head.
Maybe it'll happen. I mean, you can see Christian moving up while Lionel's still racing, so.
Yeah, great.
There you go.
Great.
There's your Iron War. Iron War Part 3 right there.
Honestly.
Anyway, on the Facebook group, you throw up, who do you think was going to win? So, first up, Mick Simpson says, I'd love to see Lucy win it. But I think it'll be a couple of years before anyone dethrones Daniela Ryf.
Yeah.
Do you want to do the next one?
Yeah. Scott Hampton says, all things being equal, I don't see anyone coming close to Ryf. And then he says, advantage Lionel, but too many unknowns on the men's side.
Sam Tompkins says, Ryf and Keenley.
Jim Huxford, Sanders and Rinne.
Gareth Beck says, Lionel Sanders and Daniela.
Tim Moore says Lionel deserves a win. I think he'll do it. Head says Daniela. Heart says Lucy.
Oh,
that's like me.
Yeah. Johnny Conway says the Lion, Sanders and Daniela. And Ryf is unstoppable. An outside bet for a podium is Joe Skipper. Get in there,
like
Joe. Yeah,
Johnny
I like
Conway.
That too. He's under the radar at the moment, Joe Skipper. Come on, Joe.
Gary Fellow says Ryf, barring disaster. And then he says, oh, champ to retain. He says an iron war between Langer, Sanders and Gomez, champ to retain, which I think means Patrick Langer.
Yeah, could be a good old race that, couldn't it? And Tony Goodyear says, Ryf and Sanders are the ones to beat in my eyes, but wouldn't it be awesome to have Lucy and Joe on the top step? So if you want to join the conversation, chuck your ideas and maybe you agree, maybe you completely disagree. There's lots of other, it's a wide open field at Kona, so get in the old Oxygen Addict Triathlon community group and get your thoughts down in there for us.
And also check out Torsten's Tri Rating. It's the annual report that Torsten Rad pulls together ahead of the World Championships in Kona. It is like 130 pages. I bought a copy today. You don't
it's great, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. You don't necessarily have to buy a copy, but think about the work that Torsten puts into it all. You
Does he still do it like a donation?
Yep. So you put a suggested donation on there. He says that the equivalent of a magazine, a triathlon magazine, is around $7. So you can put on there what you think it's worth. But think of all of the hours that he has put into that. So go and check it out at tryrating.com.
Yeah, it's really good. It's easily better than anything that the magazine's put out there. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I'm really surprised that someone hasn't taken up the, like, put it into print idea. I think it'd go down really well. So,
well,
yeah.
It goes into so much detail of the different pros this year as well. And there's little snippets of interviews with them. So it's great. It's really good. It's not just...
I bet the pros are reading it to find out what the form's like of the other people.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because he's got such a good relationship with them all because he does, because he's got that slightly different sort of different analysis, different information available to what us normal people have, then people do get in touch. And, you know, with the old Kona qualifying system, they'd very much speak to him and say, hey, Torsten, you know, who might be at this race, or which one might I go? I remember hearing an interview with someone and they said, oh, yeah, he's been really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Interesting. So get over there and check that out. Right then, Hells, I'm going to go and do my homework now and have a really good sit down, and I'm going to come up with my Kona podium. I'm going to come up with a top three.
So we're going to reveal it next week.
Yeah, we're going to have the big reveal next week. That's it, definitely. For listeners, if you want to take part in this, get on it on the Facebook group. Get your top three for the men and the women in there as well. That'd be interesting to see what's in there, because sometimes you forget people, don't you, Hells?
I know. You look at the start list, and then there are just some of these names, and you think, yes, they'll absolutely. Oh no, but what about them?
Yeah.
It's difficult.
He's nearly here. 2 weeks to wait. All right, everyone, listen, thank you very much for listening. You've been listening to the Oxygen Addicts Triathlon Podcast. I'm Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And remember, if you've got time, if you could stop by and check out the sponsors who support the show, we've got precisionhydration.com, where you can use the code OXYGENADDICT to get $9.99 worth free. We've got foodcell.co.uk, where you can use the code KONA20, and teamoxygenaddict.com. So get over onto our free Facebook page, join in the chat over there. We'd love to have you on there, blethering all things triathlon. All right, everyone, have a great, safe training and racing week. And until then, we shall speak to you again soon. Cheers, everyone. Bye now.
Bye.